Adam, good morning.
Hi, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us this morning. So this this decline in trust, I guess, trust in Australian institutions, what can we attribute this decline to?
Well, first of all, Australia, in the scale of things, is not a very corrupt country. We've dropped, as you said, from about 7th or 8th to about 13th in the last few years. But corruption is enormously difficult to measure. It's a real hard thing. It's not, you can't measure every incident, you can't measure everything that happens that you shouldn't want to happen, every individual that may be on the take. Two things. First of all, this is a perception of the way in which people see our institutions, and that has certainly declined. But secondly, when you compare Australia with many other countries, Australians can go about their daily lives without the fear or the risk of being shaken down or corruptly taken, things being corruptly misappropriated all the time.
Mm.
But there are perceptions, and we've seen a lot of the media on the New South Wales ICAC. We've seen all of the state ICACs vigilantly chasing people but getting themselves into trouble sometimes. And every time there's an incident, it gets a lot of media and people think very poorly of that.
Well, is there a measure of which institutions in particular we've seen the greatest drop in confidence in recent years?
Yes, we did. I was at the Australian National University until last year, and we did a national survey of trust in institutions and the extent to which people thought that institutions were affected by corruption. And the ones that came out the least corrupt were the military, the police, and the public service. And that's interesting because the police over a long period of time, particularly in Queensland and in Western Australia, had been very corrupted, some decades ago. The institutions that came out as the most corrupt as perceived by the community were, first of all, would you believe, the media. And the media was the one that came out. And there was a good reason for that. The survey was done at the height of some of the Alan Jones stuff and the Rupert Murdoch stuff in the UK. But the other two institutions that were perceived as very highly corrupt were trade unions and political parties. Our institutions of government, the state and local government and federal government, they were sort of in the middle, but it was the media, trade unions and political parties nationally and in all the states that were seen as the most likely to be affected by corruption.
Well, as you quite rightly point out, here in Australia, in comparison to other countries, we can go about our day-to-day lives without sort of corruption or corrupt officials, corrupt individuals interfering necessarily with our daily lives. But I guess when we talk about corruption, especially in the political process or what we're being fed through the mainstream media, we kind of go, well, my vote isn't going to matter. My engagement isn't going to matter because the system's against me anyway. The system is corrupt. Have we seen an accompanying drop in engagement, in sort of an increase, I guess, in cynicism during times where perceptions of corruption are quite high?
We've always been cynical about our politics. The main thing about corruption is, what are the opportunities for corruption? Because there are always people on the make. Sometimes our institutions have very good procedures in place and people get around them. The health inspector or the water inspector who says, I won't certify this as okay unless you give me a little kickback. Somebody who agrees to buy photocopy toner from a particular supplier because they give them a ticket to the movies or something. These things happen, but the interesting thing in Australia is we have the opportunities and it's up to the institutions to make sure those opportunities are mitigated or balanced or cut out, really. But what happens in a country like Australia, as opposed to a country like Zimbabwe or North Korea or Iraq, when there is an example of corruption, the rest of the community is outraged. We say, that is crook, that's not the way it ought to be. And as a result, we see things in the media that wouldn't wouldn't raise an eyebrow elsewhere. When Barry O'Farrell, as Premier of New South Wales, resigned over receiving a bottle of wine or over whether he could or couldn't remember whether he received a bottle of wine, I was giving lectures in the on the international circuit, and I'd say we had a Premier in Australia who resigned over a bottle of wine, and people laughed at me and said, what do you mean? They couldn't comprehend that. But that shows that we have expectations that are high, and when people breach them, we're not very happy about that.
Now, the point of contention over a re-establishment of the Australian Building and Construction Commission is concerns from many in the Labor Party that an anti-corruption agenda would be just basically a pretense to target unions. So how would an effective apolitical anti-corruption initiative actually be approached?
Well, the important thing is what's the problem that you're trying to solve? There have been calls for a federal ICAC, and I've argued that that's not really the way to go. It doesn't mean we're not trying to stop corruption, but that's not the way to go. If we look at the union thing, again, it's a question of what's the problem. Now, the Trade Union Royal Commission, led by Justice Hayden, that reported a few months ago, had a whole lot of examples of corruption in trade unions. But a lot of those examples were examples of corruption that could have happened anywhere and did happen. People padding their expense accounts, people appointing their mates to various lucrative positions. Now, that happens in business as well. And the Labor Party's apprehensive, saying, look, the things that Justice Hayden pointed to in trade unions, many of them happen elsewhere as well. But then there are some very specific things that have happened in trade unions that have had economic consequences and have affected the way people go about their livelihoods and their business. There have been examples of extortion, there have been examples of economic delay. And so the first step isn't to just roll in and say we're going to get a sledgehammer to stop all the bad things that happen, but to diagnose the problem. And there are many problems, there's no doubt about that, and you can approach each of the problems in different ways.
Well, Adam, thank you very much. Do appreciate your time and your insight into this one, because as I say, I mean, it can be quite concerning when there is this high perception that people are just going to disengage entirely. Do appreciate your time.
My pleasure.